Welcome to RegTalks, the podcast dedicated to the latest trends on the world of RegTech, FinTech, and financial regulations. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech provider Know Your Customer. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome Gaetan Rio, founding partner and director of compliance at Daxian, as my guest. Gaetan gained his comprehensive compliance and sanctions expertise from many years working in both regulated and unregulated companies in the financial system. Before co-founding Daxian, he was a compliance and risk manager for a private investment group. He has worked as a compliance consultant with a Big Four consultancy, both in the UK and Luxembourg, working on several high-level compliance projects for financial and supranational institutions. Gaetan holds an MA in international political economy and is a certified anti-money laundering specialist comes. Gaetan, thanks so much for joining us today for our RegTalks episode.
Thank you very much, Klaus, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
For me, it's always interesting to meet a fellow entrepreneur and co-founder in our space. Could you tell me a bit more about your personal journey and how you came to start Daxian?
Sure. So I always had this entrepreneurial spirit in me, I think. This comes from having had the chance to have lived across many countries in my youth, mainly in North America and Europe. After my studies, I decided to gain the skills I needed, and I think Big Fours are a great school for learning. So I stayed a couple of years in the Big Four, as you mentioned. And after this, I decided to move towards a private equity firm where I managed to gain a lot of unique experiences in the sanctions area and managing compliance for a large multi-billion firm. And at that time, I also met my two co-founders for Daxian in that private equity firm. And it felt like the right time, and you know, the stars had aligned for Daxian to be created. So we thought it was the right time to create a sort of boutique and unique compliance firm here in Luxembourg.
Yeah, it echoes a bit our story as well. You see the problem in a different environment. You think you can do something, the right people get together and you start a company. That's like the story of so many.
Exactly.
Our company, KYC, started in Asia. And most of our tier one clients, at least, are still from Hong Kong and Singapore. But we're also very active in Europe and noticed early on that we got a lot of interest from Luxembourg. More than you'd think, considering the size of the country. What's your take on the compliance space in Luxembourg and beyond, particularly in financial markets?
Absolutely. Lots is happening in Luxembourg. I think the country's motto is, let's make it happen. And that is certainly what they're trying to achieve. And it's true in the compliance space as well. Luxembourg has been booming for the last 20, 25 years. They've had uninterrupted growth at a very fast pace. Nowadays, things are a bit more complicated because of the global geopolitical situation, but every country is concerned by this. So with that enormous growth that's mainly come from financial markets and the expansion of the financial sector, compliance needs have just exploded in Luxembourg. And as a compliance professional, it is a very attractive place because it's very easy to work. There's a lot of work in compliance, a lot of needs in terms of compliance. Mainly what I would say is Luxembourg in terms of compliance is becoming the common sense person in the EU at an EU level. The government is really pushing very hard to have, of course, regulation, of course, you know, preventing AML and reducing risk. But at the same time, they recognize that it cannot be in contradiction with business expanding and that compliance shouldn't be a hindrance to business. It should be there to protect businesses. And I think it's a very unique voice in the EU at the moment where we see a much heavier regulation imposed and Luxembourg is sort of trying to find the right balance, which is quite interesting.
That is indeed very interesting. It feels a bit like Luxembourg is playing this role inside the EU that other places like, let's say, Dubai or Singapore play on a global scale as well. where they are still places where people from very different backgrounds can do business together and connect. And I think that is super important in this world that seems ever more fractured. If Luxembourg can do that inside the EU, that would be an amazing feat, really.
It would be. And I think they are, to a large extent, already managing to do this. Almost half of the population that lives in Luxembourg isn't Luxembourgish. It's people from all around the world, mainly Europe, but we're seeing a growing population from China, for example, a growing population from India and South America as well. So even emerging economies have a place in Luxembourg, and that's very exciting.
Indeed, yeah. Well, it's those small open economies in Europe that really push things forward. There's always this little tension in Europe between the big established economies of France and Germany and then the small, nimble ones that have models that deviate from the standard European one, but push things forward. I think this is really, really exciting. Yeah, glad to hear that. Yeah. You mentioned that the government and regulator are really forward-looking. How did you go about developing relationships and collaborating with your regulators there? What's that process?
Absolutely. It's very different to any other country because, you know, it's not uncommon for us to bump into the prime minister or a very senior minister of the government just having a coffee, you know, at their local cafe, because it's a small city, it's a small country, so everyone knows each other. So it's very easy to get the right contacts in Luxembourg. And on my part, it was partly due to my previous roles, where we had a necessity to build strong relationships with regulators and governments in the EU, so not only in Luxembourg and outside the EU as well, in the US and the UK. So the great thing about Luxembourg is because there's this ease of contacting and meeting these people, they also allow you to open the doors of other countries because they have diplomatic relations, they have partnerships with other countries. So we can very easily start of growing a network of contacts among regulators. And the main thing to build on those relations is trust. It's building a rapport with these people all across different countries and being honest about what you're trying to achieve for your company and being honest in what you're telling them and basically making them comfortable with who you are and having no secrets. It's the main reason why we've been successful at building this network of contacts across multiple jurisdictions is honesty, being transparent.
You make it sound easy.
It's not. It's something that is built over a number of years. It takes time. There are setbacks. You know, for geopolitical reasons, there are countries that just don't want to talk to us and where it's much harder. There are other countries where compliance is not really something they do, so where it's very new to them. So they're still not sure how to approach certain subjects. So it can be very delicate. It's, you know, one of the many hats you have to put on as an entrepreneur. I'm sure you know. Also being a bit of a diplomat sometimes.
I have to say, though, that our success with regulators has been mixed. And we have had better progress in Asia, actually. The regulators of Hong Kong and Singapore are really engaging with technology companies, where a lot of European, you're in a different area a bit, so you're not seen as a technology company so much. But in Europe, we've struggled with connecting with the regulators in a meaningful way. The answer is always, Klaus, you're not regulated. We regulated your users. So bring us one of the big banks and then we talk, not the other way around. That has been reversed to a degree in Asia, where the Central Bank of Hong Kong, the Hong Kong MA, and MAS, the Singaporean regulator, for example, are really forward-looking and look towards technology as a means to increase regulations or get better regulating their authorized institutions, as I call them. And we haven't seen that so much. It's a bit of a missed opportunity here in Europe for me, I'd say, in terms of working with tech. especially since RegTech is always very near SupTech, supervisory technology. They could use it for their own ends. We haven't seen that a lot here. But I think it's more a question of time. At least in Europe, we have had incredible movement on making anti-money laundering regulations more specific and broadening it and bringing it in different verticals and all that. You must have seen that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I would add to your point saying, I think the Asian market is a lot more mature when it comes to the willingness of adopting new technologies, especially in compliance and finance in general. In Europe, we're still a bit stuck in our old ways sometimes. You know, as part of my work for like four firms, I was sent to many companies as late as 2020. And you'd be surprised by the amount of companies, multi-billion companies, who still own 100% manual processes when it comes to their compliance here in Europe. It's staggering that the fact that they leveraged virtually no technology that is available. So I think it's also that the problems you've had with regulators reflect the market, where we don't in Europe still leverage anywhere near enough the available technology. And we're still very suspicious of the technology. It's like, oh, can AI or can an automated tool do a better job than a person? Well, yes, to a large extent. Obviously, you still need human input, but it can cut, you know, significantly times of completing a task. But we're still very suspicious of that in Europe.
Yeah, I do remember that our first success with a large bank in Germany, for example, just to echo that, was when that bank was acquired by an American PE fund. And the Americans came in and pushed the Germans and said, now set up some technology and start with onboarding and credit origination, those areas. And onboarding was our area. We got in with them because very early on, they were under pressure to automate, which they wouldn't normally from their own have done. The difference in speeds and adoption. Yeah, I see that too.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, then your firm does something really interesting. I found it absolutely fascinating when I heard it for the first time. You're dealing in situations where compliance is difficult. Can you share maybe a couple of interesting higher risk situations and how do you deal with such situations?
Absolutely. Well, listen, I like to solve complex puzzles and complex things. It makes life a bit more interesting than having an easy job. So yes,
we wouldn't have started our companies if we weren't into solving difficult puzzles.
Exactly. So I think that comes with the entrepreneurial spirit is this willingness to challenge yourself and face difficulty as it's part of the job. So we are specialized in what we call special situations, which are situations that are usually severe enough that banks or financial institutions in general will not really want to onboard you initially, not really look into you because they see you as much of a high risk. So we've had situations where it might just be a geographical risk with companies from certain countries in the Middle East, or it might be a minority shareholding that is on a sanctions list. It could be situations, a UBO with what a lot of adverse media. And basically, we come in and we are sort of the solution of last resort for a lot of these companies, where they struggle to be onboarded by banks, struggle to keep open bank accounts. And our role is to re-engage, usually because the main problem is those companies usually have a dialogue that has broken down with their financial institutions. So our role is really to rebuild that dialogue to start with as a starting point. Then the second phase is really demonstrating to that financial institution or regulator or whoever it may be that our client does not pose a severe risk to them and they have no valid reason not to onboard. That the way we do it is we will start by looking internally at our clients. So we ask total transparency on the side of our client, because we need to know where the problems lay and what we can do to remediate that or mitigate them. So it could be internal restructuring. It could be reviewing completely new policies. It could be implementing new requirements internally for that company. So we've done things like force every employee to sign attestations every month. So every employee in that company had to sign an attestation every month to ensure that and prove that there was no sanctions breach and things like that, or communicating every transaction in advance to financial institutions so they would just be comfortable with any financial transactions going on in a company. So things like that. It's simple steps, common sense steps in a way, but that are sometimes difficult to put in place, but also and are admin heavy for the companies. But it's, you also are not in a situation if you're one of those companies where you can afford to do business as usual. So by doing that restructuring, reviewing everything internally in terms of procedures, and then having had this new dialogue open with the financial institution, we can go to them with a large pack of information, documents, statements, and which demonstrate that there is no risk, material risk to the bank. And that usually is what works. It's not 100% proof, because, you know, there are also geopolitical situations that were out of our hand, but more often than not, it works, and we will get a positive outcome for our client.
It sounds like something I might need, because if you Google my name now, all these money laundering articles come up, and money laundering is just like is mentioned in every second thing that I do online, and I wonder when I will be rejected for my next account. Currently, there hasn't been a problem. But I have to say, even our limited structure, where we have, for example, a UK subsidiary that is owned by our Hong Kong main company, and there's a couple Hong Kong shareholders, and there's Richard and me, we co-founders, there's investors. Even that structure is slightly complex, and it doesn't go in anywhere in really dodgy territory. But even involving Hong Kong, which is like such a rule-based economy and all that, that caused severe delays here in Europe to get bank accounts for a subsidiary. You could just hear it clicking into EDD. This is no longer simple. This is Absolutely. Now more extensive due diligence. And the whole process slowed to a crawl. So maybe if this goes on more, we need your services too.
Do tell them if you need anything on that front. Absolutely.
Happy to work with you. When we talk about technology adoption, that's another thing we had earlier. That usually comes with automation, increased efficiency, lower manual costs. Sounds all good. Does cutting costs equate to cutting corners, though?
Well, that is certainly the prevailing opinion, I feel, here in Europe. There is a definite equation of if you spend less, it's probably of the worst quality when it comes to the compliance and the technology space in compliance.
Man.
That's not necessarily true. And frankly, you know, compliance is still an industry in its teens. It's not a mature industry. The main regulations here in Luxembourg are 20 years old, really, since we've seen like major regulations in terms of it. So it's still very young. And what comes with that is we don't really know how much compliance should cost. And we've had 20 years, really, where we've seen a lot of consultancy companies charge whatever they felt like charging to clients to provide services. That, yes, it is a unique set of skills to be in compliance, but frankly, they've been charging very hefty fees for something that can be done nowadays with technology for a lot less. However, cutting costs doesn't mean losing quality. I think the technology is enables us to have much higher quality and crucially consistency. And that is something that is very much appreciated by regulators, is to see, you know, the same format, the same document for every client. And so this consistency is best achieved through the leveraging of technology. And I think there is also a fear within the industry that automation means no more jobs. I mean, no. If you look at Luxembourg, you can go on LinkedIn or wherever, and you'll see the sheer number of jobs that are available. It's massive. And they won't just disappear because we've leveraged technology. The role will change. Maybe greater efficiency will be requested of compliance officers. So where, you know, you'd have targets of maybe 2 or 3 cases a day, thanks to the use of technology, you might need be at 10 cases a day. But that's good for everyone because it means lower costs per case, which means that banks and financial institutions can continue serving their customers to reduce costs. What we've seen, and it's been quite a rock to the Luxembourg financial market, is ING here in Luxembourg had to offboard a significant amount of customers in the last couple of weeks. And the main reason for that was the cost of compliance doesn't justify the account being open. So if you do not leverage the technology, if you do not leverage all the tools you have out there, you end up in a situation where it doesn't make sense to continue operating a business. And that's bad for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely agree there. We see that so often with the companies we work with. There is never a reduction in staff. And it is an absolute pleasure to see compliance staff redirecting their efforts from being just document chasers to their actual function. I mean, Leighton, you learn at counts the whole science of anti-money laundering and the higher levels. And if you didn't have time for it, you would be stuck in just, oh, let me get another document here and let me get another document there. We see that very often, that the function of the compliance team is operating at a much higher level after the introduction of technology than before, because they literally have more time for that. Absolutely. So, yeah.
I fully agree. This notion of compliance officers becoming document chasers is 100% accurate. I've done projects for big companies where literally our only role was to send reminders to clients or relationship managers to provide us with documents. And that's what we did for a year. Those were companies with virtually no technology being leveraged in the compliance space. So I can say, having done it for a number of years, it's not the most interesting part of the job, to put it politely.
Yeah, I guess. So if we're talking about the advanced technologies like data analytics, AI, and other new technologies, what role do they play in Daxian's compliance risk management services? Are you using those?
Absolutely, yeah. So we are Luxembourg-based, but we are a global company at heart. We aim to service our clients all across the globe, wherever you are, but well, no, a certain level of risk, because and not everyone works in an environment like Luxembourg or Hong Kong, where there's a rule of law and there's very clearly defined rules. So we use your platform, we use other technology to ensure that we know everything there is to know about the people we deal with. And basically, we see technology as this is the tool that will allow a compliance officer to make an informed decision. The decision always will lie with a human. I don't believe that one day we will have a full automation where KYC will be 100% done automatically. I don't think that's a good thing either, necessarily. But you can cut out 99% of the work and do that through technology. And really, the role of technology is to give and highlight the relevant information to the compliance officer. So you see a file, and within a few seconds, you can already determine basically the level of risk that it poses. Do you need to escalate? Do you need to file it? Do you need more information? And that is really where technology is just a huge added value for us and as compliance people. It saves us a huge amount of time. I remember when I started quite a while back now, we had to go on Google and manually search everything. And, you know, we had to go through, I think it was, our standard was the first 50 results that we had to review manually. So, you know, the sheer amount of time that would take is just incredible. Nowadays, thanks to new technology and AI, you can have that done in seconds. So the time saved is huge. And for us at Daxion, as you mentioned earlier, it allows us to focus on what we do, our real role, which is make decisions, assess risk, and protect our clients. That's our main role. So we can do that fully. We don't need to be chasing information. We don't need to be running around the internet and registers for days on end to find that little piece of information or that tiny piece of adverse media that, you know, we could easily miss because of the sheer amount of manual work. No, it's immediately highlighted to us within a matter of seconds. Hey, there's an article from a few years ago saying this bad thing. What should we do about it? And that's where we can come in.
Very good. I absolutely agree. We built our own platform also on the belief that the compliance decision is with humans in the end, but we push automation all the way, the most we can do up to that point. Have you tried asking ChatGPT, is it okay to onboard this person or this company?
I have actually, yes. Not really 100% return on that with those questions. Usually ChatGPT will, it's very interesting because it will give you information. It won't give you a decision. It won't say, oh yes, of course it can onboard. It will say, well, this is what I could find on this company, which is a good first step. But
it also has hallucinations. Like I did try like really wild things like, get me the shareholders and directors of Know Your Customer Limited. And it did start right because it took, like, there's so much public about the company. It took my name as CEO and put it in there as one of the founders, which is correct in this case, but just by chance. And then it just deviated wildly hallucinating. It sounded all quite, when you read it, it was believable. Because these names all sounded like they came from the banking world and they weren't just random names. They were names seemed to fit. That is like the true problem. But you can, of course, use AI in very specific circumstances, like to extract a specific point of data from a specific document that you feed in. And there they can be incredibly efficient. And that's where we use. There's an increased usage over the years for all sorts of technologies in our platform. And the possibilities with OpenAI's new platform, LLMs, to understand and extract meaning from relatively unstructured documents, like not like the forms in the company registry, but for example, the constitutions of companies, where you can find specific provisions that limit the decision power of a board, for example, with this technology is absolutely amazing. And that's where we use it. Yeah. One more question for you that we do ask every guest here on the podcast. And that is, if you were to switch roles tomorrow and become the global regulator, what would you do?
Well, that would be a lot of fun. I think it's something that I would do, something that really I find is crucial in terms of future of the compliance industry globally is, and that is to reconcile really the business development side with the compliance side, especially in Europe and Western countries. We regulations have been built in a certain way that it built a wall between the two, where, you know, communication is very difficult. I've been in many companies, and the view everywhere is, from relationship managers, is compliance is only here to stop us doing business. And on the compliance side, the view for a business or relationship managers was, oh, they're just out there to destroy the company. So the problem is the regulations are built that way, where there's sort of this separation, total separation between the business side and the compliance side, whereas it should be working together. In my view, it should be a situation where we have the same interests at heart. We need the company to succeed, but we also need to make sure we're not breaking any laws or putting the company at risk, those any reputational risk or sanctions risk or whatever risk. So I think my main job, if I was the global regulator, would be to break down that wall, at least partially, so that the interests of business developers and compliance sort of align again and communication is reinstalled internally in companies, but also externally. Too often, compliance departments are sheltered from their customers, from their business development managers. And that's not a good thing, I think, in the long term. We need everyone to talk to each other. And I think if everyone has open dialogue about what they need and what they require of each other, you could see quite a big boom in business.
I absolutely agree. It's a very interesting take and a very good take. I absolutely agree there. What we see is the best compliance heads are those that have that attitude already, that have the attitude, here's a puzzle. I do need to be completely compliant, and that's my goal here. But I also want to enable business. How I can get these two together? And if you come with that mindset, there's very different outcomes. Yeah, I'd love if regulator would support them more. I suspect they have been kind of comfortable in this world where these are two completely separate things, and they don't need to deal with the business side so much. But that's obviously an illusion, because the companies they regulate will have to do business or they're gone. So they built in this tension. They just get rid of that tension from in their viewpoint to in the company. Yeah. Super interesting, Gaetan. Thank you so much. It has been a really interesting chat here. Thanks for taking part in Rec Talks.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Faf.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rec Talks. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RecTech provider Know Your Customer. If you liked the episode, please subscribe to the whole series and leave us a review. And if you'd like to connect with us, suggest a guest or a topic for an upcoming episode, please send us a message at info@knowyourcustomer.com. Or visit knowyourcustomer.com/rectalks.